I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Welcome to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. Man, oh man, Mother Nature is trying to make up her mind on weather on the Great Plains. It's been pretty exhausting keeping track of the temperature swings nowadays. You know, we have days full of sunshine and nearly 75 degree days. And then the next day we're in the teens and there's a blizzard coming.
Yeah, you know, that's for sure. Getting ready to set up the recording for today. I mean, the weather is 70 degrees. Who knows what it's going to be like when we post this recording. But the low tomorrow is 5 here. So 65 degree swing in 24 hours. I guess that's February on the plains. But you know, that snow that we got last week, it kind of had a crazy blizzard. It was interesting. We wound up with probably close to 7 or 8 inches of snow and some pretty good drifts. Didn't have to go very far actually north of here. And I don't think they hardly got any, but made for some really good cottontail rabbit hunting. My youngest son and I got out yesterday and got around some blackberry bramble thickets and were able to bag some cottontails. So, and we found a dandy shed antler. You know, it was really cool because it was so fresh. There was still blood on the base of the antler. And with that snow, you could see that deer's tracks and they were nice, clean tracks. You could tell that they hadn't melted off at all. They were fresh. And we were able to track that deer for a good mile looking for the other shed. We didn't have any luck. But I will say it was still worth the effort, just, you know, following that deer, following his track, seeing where he went, looking for that other antler.
That's pretty rare. That's really cool. I saw that picture and my first thought was, that is a fresh shed. Mm-hmm. That's way cool. Way cool. In that situation, you got to be thankful for the blizzard.
That's right. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. More importantly, that time with your kids too. I love that because in my head, they're just storing up the best memories in their memory bank to pass on to their kids and their kids. And I just love that. It's really cool.
It's a good time. Yeah. In fact, we even stopped at one little point. I had a backpack with a few things in it and built a little fire and warmed up and heated up some water and made some hot cocoa and stuff. So made a pretty fun afternoon.
Yeah. That's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, right.
Well, while you were out enjoying the snow and looking for sheds, Steph and I were actually in Iowa, our wonderful guest today that I'm about to introduce. And, you know, I always say we have a special guest on, but today in particular, I definitely think that's the case. Today we have Steph Lane on with us. She resides in Iowa. She's a mentor, coach, podcast host, hunter, angler, and she is passionate about sharing and passing on her love for the outdoors to others. And she's also part of the Pass It On Outdoor Mentors team. We're super thrilled to have her on today.
Heck yeah. Welcome to the podcast, Steph. It's great to get a chance to hang out with you today, hear about you and your story and what you got going on.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Tell us about yourself a little bit, Steph.
Sure. This is like always such a hard question because I don't know where to start.
How did you get into the outdoors? Let's start there. Because okay, I feel like good. You could easily talk for 5 days straight about how awesome you are.
Oh, I could talk for 5 days straight. That's right. I don't know about how awesome I am, but for sure I could talk that long. I like you guys said, I'm born and raised in Eastern Iowa. I have been in Iowa my whole life. I got started in the outdoors from a very young age. My dad's an avid hunter and angler, and he started taking me along with him when I was about 4. I've shared this story so many times, and I can still replay it over and over. I still remember the first time he took me duck hunting. I can vividly remember standing there next to him and my uncles and my cousin and watching him walk back with those ducks. And him, you know, he still tells me, he's like, I was pretty sure I was either going to make you or break you that day. You know, my 4-year-old little girl just looking at me wide eyed when I'm carrying these dead ducks in my hands. You know, a couple of them he had to finish the job, and I just stared at him bright eyed, and he's like, this was going to be it. And he's like, and you just kept going with me from there. And yeah, that's how it all started.
He didn't ruin you.
He didn't ruin me.
And in fact, I would say the quite opposite of that. He truly inspired you.
Yes, absolutely.
You grew up, so your whole family is heavily involved in the outdoors too, right, Steph?
Kind of. So that has evolved so much. My dad was the one who initially got me into everything. He was self-taught for the most part. My grandfather liked to squirrel hunt, trap shoot, and fish for sure. But the rest of it, my dad taught himself. And then taught me. I am a middle child. I have 2 brothers. So I have an older brother and a younger brother. My little brother grew up hunting with me once he, you know, became about 4 or 5 years old also. And now is one of my go-to hunting, trapping, fishing buddies. We do that together. What's especially special to me though is, so like my mom doesn't hunt. My aunts, most of my cousins don't hunt. I have a couple cousins that hunt a little bit. So it was primarily a couple of my uncles, one cousin in particular, my dad, my younger brother, and I. But now my older brother, I'm like so proud, and I think he thinks it's super annoying, but my older brother just got his hunter's ed, just got his hunting license. And this last season, he got his first buck, his first goose. So to just like have my older brother get into it later, and now my nephew, his son, is getting into it, it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. So you're kind of pulling at my heartstrings hearing your story about your dad taking you, because, I grew up hunting small game, squirrels and stuff like that with my grandfather. And so growing up, I've got 2 young boys. Well, they were young. They're getting older by the day, right? And I used to pack them around like to the duck marsh with diapers and baby wipes in my blind bag, you know, when they were. I just put them in the sled with my decoys and pull them with me. So, you know, to hear that story about how important that was for you. And so obviously it's ingrained in you. It took root, right? And what have you done with it now? So sounds like you had, you know, deep roots like an acorn next to the river, right? It really had plenty of nourishment, took off with. So what's that look like for you now?
Oh my gosh. it's evolved and changed a lot. I never really, you know, like a lot of folks when they go through the age of, you know, having a boyfriend or girlfriend or getting into sports, getting into college, you know, that sort of thing. You know, sometimes the outdoors might come to a complete halt or take kind of a break. I never stopped hunting. I haven't gone a year of my life since I started that I haven't been hunting, at least a couple species. So it never stopped, but it slowed down for a period of time when I was starting my career. And that's what really, when I was starting my career, I had this moment of, I was working my tail off. Any free time I had, like my vacation was for hunting with my family, but I just kind of felt like a shell of myself, you know. And when I was on long sales car rides, all I listened to were podcasts about the outdoors to fill up my time. And it's all I thought about. It's all I really wanted to talk about. And in like corporate America, there's very few people who wanted to talk about it with me at the time. And it just like really lit something, and I just became obsessed. And then I decided to become a certified archery instructor through USA Archery. Archery has kind of always been my shtick, I guess, what I like to teach, where I feel confident in teaching. And I was a lot more in my shell then, and I was working on a lot of confidence things. And I just thought maybe if I could teach somebody else, mentor, and I can't even explain it. It was just this feeling to do it. And then after I did that, I worked for a radio station and I was in sales at this radio station. We had three different like substations underneath the overall family. One of them was an ESPN sport channel. And on their whiteboard with all the ESPN guys, I wrote, like, it was like their idea board. I wrote "From the Stand with Steph." Just joking around, like, "Hey, you guys are going to give me my own segment on the radio." Well, the CEO of the radio station saw it and she took me into her office and she asked me, she's like, "Are you at all serious about that?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, but it sounds like terrifying, like to be on the radio." And she's like, "I want you to give it a try. We'll give you a couple minutes, like a week, just to talk about whatever subject in the outdoors you want to talk about." I was like, "What?" Like, this is crazy. And so they gave me a chance of doing that for, you know, a couple minutes every week. And it helped my confidence so much. And, you know, again, I'm still in corporate America. I'm still not getting enough of like what I want to do. So I get this radio show and opportunity comes up and I have to leave the radio show behind. But I'm like, why do I have to stop? I can just start a podcast. And so I had a good friend help me start a podcast about the Outdoors Woods and Waters Project. So at this time now, I'm an archery instructor. I have a podcast about the outdoors. And it all just kind of started to compile onto each other. I started mentoring people a lot more, started hosting workshops, have now hosted my first like women's retreat. We did an archery, bow hunting, bow fishing retreat. And gosh, I've taught turkey hunting classes. I've helped mentor a number of pheasant hunting classes. And now we're here. And now I'm here with Outdoor Mentors. And so I just have built a lot of my life around this. And it makes me like truly happy to be able to talk about this stuff all the time.
So let's back up just a little bit. You mentioned archery instruction and then workshops. Is that under, I mean, is that just something you were volunteering through another organization, or is that something you're doing as your Woods and Waters Project? Is it hosting a clinic or a talk? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah, it kind of started as both in the beginning. I was, at the time, I was really heavily involved with Mike County's Pheasants Forever chapter. And they were really doing some, you know, at least from what I could tell, doing some unique things compared to a lot of other like neighboring counties. We were doing a lot of classes and workshops and how-tos. And we did shooting workshops and we did like a handgun, shotgun, archery section. And they asked me to teach the archery section. I did the workshop through Pheasants Forever a couple of times. From there, those people who took my workshop, they wanted more, you know, so they kind of followed me along and asked for, you know, individual like help and that sort of thing. Because of Pheasants Forever and their connection with the Iowa DNR and some mutual friends and, you know, people we knew, they were putting together a program called Field to Fork. So it's a program where you take about, it's usually 10 adults. They'll take 10 adults who are not hunters and they're not archers. And in 10 weeks, we get all 10 adults out deer hunting for the first time. And they have to pass a series of like tests. And they all have to be pulling back 40 pounds. So you're taking 10 people who've never done either one, hunting or archery, and getting them prepared. My connection with Pheasants Forever and the Iowa DNR knew that I was coaching and that I wanted to continue coaching. So he asked me to be the archery coach for this program. And I said yes. And gosh, since then, I was trying to do the math the other day. So roughly in like a little less than 3 years, I've either collect with somebody else or individually have coached about 100 people, mostly adult women in archery, as it relates to hunting for the most part.
So I'm going to stop you just for a minute because some of our listeners may not understand. I mean, you just bit off a lot right there.
Where, I know.
So this project was sponsored by the Iowa DNR. Is that right? The Field to Fork. Okay.
Yep.
So they're taking, I'm guessing probably Pittman Robertson money, that comes through license sales, yes. Right? And ammunition and things of that nature. And so they're taking those dollars and building a program to bring new hunters specifically into archery deer hunting, it sounds like. So
yes.
So those people have to develop the skill. So they have to have equipment, right? A bow, release, rest, sights, arrows, broadheads, possibly tree stands, ground blinds, get access to places to hunt.
Yep.
Apply for a tag in the timely manner so that they can have a tag when season is open. And so you're mentoring how many people at one time in that bubble, right?
Yeah. So, it was 10 adults. So I was the archery instructor, but then at the end of it, every adult was paired off with an individual mentor to actually sit with them in the deer blind.
Uh-huh.
All of the equipment was provided by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources.
Wow.
And they had the option at the end of the program to purchase their bow, release, and case at the end. So mm-hmm. They had their own individual equipment. No one else touched it. So it was, you know, fitted for them.
New equipment to start with?
Yep.
Wow.
Okay.
Yep.
Fantastic project.
Yeah. And I've done that two times now. We did have one during COVID during 2020, but that looked a lot different, as you can imagine, than the first year. It was a lot more virtual and there's a lot of things there, but they were both really successful and really great.
So you probably said this, were most of these people adults?
Yes, all okay. adults.
Okay.
Yep.
So I guess in my mind, mostly women. Okay.
Yep.
I mean, as far as the R3 movement, by recruiting, right, adult onset hunters, mostly women, and then mentorship and then the retainment. I mean, if you offer all of the tools that they had to accomplish, what was the success rate? Did they all take a deer? Did you have some not able to? Yeah, I mean, because as a bow hunter, I've spent a lot of hours in a tree and you know, you're not always successful.
Yeah. That's a great question. And I'd love to know, since then, how many of them have got a deer? Cause I've stayed in touch with almost all of them to some degree. Because we've just become friends. I mean, it was just that much time together at, you know, so it was a 10-week program. They, you know, outside of their time with me, I don't know how much they practiced, but they were committed to every Tuesday for 2 hours of archery practice. So that's what I think is amazing, is bare minimum for 10 weeks, they practice for 2 hours a week. So it's not really that much time if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, how quickly these people got, you know, they're shooting and not all of their arrows at 9-inch circles, they're all pulling back 40 pounds to go from zero to that. I mean, that's just all capabilities. Like, that just speaks so much about like the program and then those individuals, like how determined they were. I know a number of them have gotten a deer since that program. The actual weekend of the deer hunt, we were in a state park that we got permission to do more of like a management hunt style. It's actually kind of like funny, like in the best way. There were a couple folks that had a doe in a shooting range of them that they could have shot, and there were a couple that just couldn't take the shot yet. That makes sense. Like, they just, this was a big deal to them to take an animal's life. And so, you know, that part of it is definitely something to consider. Like, they got themselves out there, but they weren't quite maybe ready for that move yet. but a number of those folks have gotten multiple deer since this program. So I'd like to know what the number is. I don't know it offhand.
That's incredible. And kudos to you for taking time to do that, Steph, and stepping into that position, but also kudos to the Iowa DNR. I mean, whoa, talk about going above and beyond to provide a program that is truly focusing on getting a large group of people who aren't hunting out, you know, truly teaching them from the ground up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's amazing thinking about the Iowa DNR had to identify that, look, we have this resource of this deer population that belongs to all of the citizens of Iowa. You know, you can see that across practically all the Great Plains states, right? They get to identify, you know, we have this resource, it belongs to every resident of this state. And to build a program like that, not only to help manage through recruiting and retaining new hunters and manage that resource, but just to develop that fellowship and continue that tradition of hunting. I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was such a cool thing to be a part of. I didn't even know anything like that existed until it was brought to me. And it was, you know, that experience has done so much for me as a person. There were other mentors involved that I learned so much from, you know, have become friends with. I'm friends with a lot of the, mentees, the new hunters. And I hadn't really coached in that setting before. And so it just taught me a lot about myself and how I want to do things, and gave me the confidence to keep doing it too. So that program, just for numbers of reasons, was incredible for all involved, I think.
So is that program still going today? Is it just like it was? Have they amended it?
Yeah.
Changed it, added to it?
Yeah. They are always making adjustments to it. You know, the land we can get them on, and like the actual hunting itself, that's a big thing, because, you know, at that specific hunt, there was so much awesomeness leading up to it, and it was still great, but no one got a deer that weekend. And, you know, that particular group, like, I don't feel like they measured their success based on that by any means. But, you know, where can we go? Where can we put people to like give them the best chance at a deer, at least, like, you know, somebody. So then as the class wraps up, we can go over the next steps. Luckily, the DNR knew about our event, and because no one got a deer, we were worried we wouldn't be able to go through the cleaning process, the harvesting process. And actually someone had just hit a doe right outside of the park during the class. So we got to then, after the hunt, go through that process with them, and everyone got their hands dirty and learned how to do it. And then we had a professional cook come in and cook the deer a whole bunch of different ways. And so that was just like a full blown experience. I mean, it was really cool, but it would be so much more, you know, if it was actually a student's, a hunter's deer. That would be something I think they think about a lot. Like, how can we have someone have more success out there? But they're always adjusting it.
Man, so much of that stuff that you're talking about reminds me of just kind of shooting your shot, right? And you talk about how getting involved with organizations like the Iowa DNR and their Field of Fork program, and being an archery instructor has, and your, the radio segment too, right, has increased your confidence so much. And I think that's just a great testimony to all of us who are longing to maybe learn something new or get into something new, but are too insecure to be vulnerable and put ourselves out there. I mean, it's incredible to see who you've developed into just because of saying yes to saying, I'm going to go be incredibly out of my shell and become a USA archery instructor. What? Like, I'm going to help mentor nearly 100 individuals in the outdoors. I mean, it's exceptional. And this kind of, it makes me, reminds me of when we first hired you on with Outdoor Mentors. And I think I was talking with Mike about this, and I hadn't gotten to know you quite well enough yet. You know, we'd had some conversations, and I remember him mentioning casually, like, yeah, Steph is like going to guide school and Montana or like Wyoming or something crazy like that. And I was like, guide school? Like, what do you mean guide school? Like, she's like going to like learn how to be a guide in the outdoors, like by yourself. And then I remember talking to you, like, yeah, I'm driving here, camping out in this like national park, and then driving in and going to the school. And I mean, in my head at the time, I was like, this girl's got it going on, and she's like on fire. And what I've appreciated about that since that, like, you know, knowing you went to guide school, is hearing you in Iowa talk to you more about what that experience was like. And I think it's a good segue in this conversation for you to share some of that experience, because I think it all kind of lumps into one a little bit.
Yeah. So guide school.
Yeah.
Gosh, there's a lot of layers there. I'm trying not to unpack them all. So when I was little, I remember, you know, our family, kind of back to the beginning of the conversation of like the outdoors being rooted in our family, even though a good portion of us like hunted and were out, you know, outdoorsy. Every Sunday when I was growing up, one of my dad's best friends would come, farming friend. He's the owner of the property I grew up hunting on, basically, when we weren't on public land. He would buy our family a bunch of pizza, and he would come over to my parents' house, and all my uncles and cousins and everyone would come over every single Sunday for years and years. And we would sit there and all watch the Hunting Channel together. And when I was little, you know, back then, so I'm 30. So I'm, you know, this is between the ages of like, from what I can remember, I was probably like 6 to like my early teens that this was happening. And there were women on the Outdoor Channel, definitely, but there wasn't very many. And they didn't show them out hunting that much. Like they would talk, you know, back home, but they weren't really on the screen a whole lot actually hunting. And I was the only female in my family that hunts. I used to get up there in front of my whole family, like in front of the TV, and like tell them, like proclaim that I'm going to be this woman, like this really like badass woman hunter. And also I'm going to like teach the guys how to do this too, you know? And, like I still, when I was really trying to get like out of my shell and just realized I wasn't being the person I, you know, told my four-year-old self I wanted to be, the last few years have just been crazy for me, and just development and things I've put myself through, I guess. My 30th birthday was on a Monday, July 19th. I'd been looking up guide schools off and on for like a few years, thinking about, I just want that experience. Like I want to take people out on like a legit hunt, guide them, you know, be a pheasant guide, be a waterfowl guide. Like I want to do that, even just part-time. And I didn't know what I needed to do. I know guide school isn't necessary for that, but it's just been in the back of my mind for so long, and thinking about how to, I guess, do something a lot of people don't do, you know, go the extra step. And I was looking in Western guide schools for a really long time, but I'm like, hey, you know, they're doing like some mountain stuff, which is awesome. I would love to do, but I live in the Midwest. Like this is my home. I don't plan on moving out West. I'm like, God, it would be really awesome if there was like a Midwest guide school, you know? And I just happened to find this school in South Dakota that had just started, just the last few years. And, like 5 years maybe. And they were specializing in pheasant, whitetail, waterfowl, snow geese, and dog training. And I'm like, oh, these are all my favorite things besides turkey hunting. It covers pretty much everything. And South Dakota, I'm like, this is awesome. And the first day of guide school was on my 30th birthday. So I took that as a sign and as a gift to myself, put myself into guide school. And yeah, that's how I got there. And every day was a specialty point. So you had a day where they put you in real life scenarios. And they kind of just like, they kind of prep you a little bit, but they put you like for the waterfowl day, for example, we went out to a piece of public land. There was a truck, trailer, and boat. I decided I have to unload the boat, start the boat, get the client comfortable, pick the spot. We get to the spot. I have to put the decoys out. The guide, the teacher, is saying ridiculous things to me that maybe a client might say, which was like so real. And then when we sat in the boat, he would give me different scenarios. So he would talk about like a teal coming through. Okay, they're coming in at 40 yards, 30 yards, you know, calling the shot. So we did a bunch of calling the shot scenarios. And every day was like that. So it was like real, like, what do you got? What can you bring to the table? How to talk to private landowners. We did first responder, type stuff. So how we respond to one of the clients is like had an arrow stuck through their thigh and like how we would treat that. We put up tree stands and I had to put up a part of a snow goose spread and it was 90 degrees. I mean, this is July. So it was rough. I mean, it was the real deal and it was awesome. It was awesome. I'm so glad I did it. I was offered an opportunity with the outfitter at the end of it. It was like almost to the season where I would have just had to move there for 2 months. I couldn't quite do that, but I was really proud of myself. I did way better than I thought I was going to. I knew a lot more than I knew that I knew. I hadn't ever been tested or asked some of these things before. So it was very humbling, but it was also very, again, with the confidence, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can do this stuff. Like I didn't need to go to school to do this, but it brought a lot out of me. And I met some really cool people from it too. So
definitely like furthered your education. And now you're putting that to work as a guide on different preserves there in Iowa. And I'm sure that just also makes you feel a little more credible as well. You know,
working with
women or men or youth in the outdoors. Not that you have to have a badge saying I went to guide school, but you certainly speak of confidence in your abilities and you're so easy to learn from, I think, because of that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
That sounds like an amazing experience for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
And so you mentioned pheasant, ducks, snow geese, deer, but I heard you mention something about turkeys.
Yeah.
I'd heard that maybe you do some turkey mouth calling. Is that right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
We don't need a lot. I mean, just enough to, you know, if you got one that just pitched down, big old Tom's up on the roost and he pitched down and you just want to get his attention. What's that sound like?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
It's awesome. Awesome.
One more time.
I'm laughing so hard right now.
You got to do it one more time. One more time.
I do?
Yep, yeah. One more time.
Okay. Gobble. Sometimes I can do that pretty good, but other times it's a little like, I don't know what that
is. That's how it goes, isn't it? Man. That right there is like got my heart pumping. Like,
oh, actually, I remember so Steph was talking to me about this in Iowa, and I was like, man, how good is she? And then you showed me, and I was like, what? And then I think I got on your Instagram at one point when I was developing some lightning round questions for you, and I saw some videos of you doing it, and it's so cool to watch you do that. I mean, just the skill and the time you've taken to work on that, it's great. It's really great.
So that's just with my natural voice. So if anyone's listening, I don't have like a diaphragm in or anything like that.
No.
I'm actually not that very good. I'm not very good with the diaphragm. I'd like to be better with it just from a volume standpoint, probably. Uh-huh. But I just randomly tried repeating a sound one time and realized I could repeat it pretty well. I'm like, oh, this is cool. This has just happened the last like year or so. And I have a confession. I've been so nervous about it too. So I don't know if anyone listening or you guys know who Preston Pittman is.
Oh yeah.
But so I really got excited when I started to learn who he was. And I listened to a podcast of him talking about natural voice calling. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy is awesome. So I started watching all of his routines and listening to him. And for people who don't know, he's like the world champion natural voice caller, like turkey caller. Well, he has a Facebook page, and just this last week was National Wild Turkey Federation Convention. And I did that last clip, Brittany, that you probably saw. And one of my friends is like, oh, you're just a regular Preston Pittman. And I said, I should send this to him. They're like, yeah, send it. And so I did. And I sent him this like note of just like, I know you probably give this. I don't know if this is even appropriate. I'm sorry. I just learned that I can do this. and I'd like to, you know, get better. Like, do you have tips, or like, is there a competition I could join? Is there a women's group, you know, whatever. And he looked at it, but he didn't respond. So I've been like anxious. I've checked my Facebook Messenger like 20 times waiting for him to respond. So
even without a response, you're still 10 times cooler than me.
I want to be in the woods with you in the spring. So, you know, it's funny. My kids both turkey hunt. I've got two boys. And if we're like in Walmart, in the grocery store or something, and maybe they went around the aisle and they're looking at the cereal or something, and I'm not sure, like, where the kids at, you know? And so I'll just, and then they'll go, whoa, whoa, whoa. The people in the store looking around like, what is happening? Yeah. You know, but that's kind of our locator for each other.
Oh, geez, yeah. The McDonald family's at it again. Right. It's like the modern wild man Marco Polo game.
Yep.
That's awesome.
I love that. I would also like to do some research on that. So like people who consider themselves runners, like people who engage in running casually or for competition, right? Only 1% of people who run marathons, which is just baffling to me. And I'd imagine that of people who turkey hunt, that percentage for natural mouth calling is super low as well.
Yeah, I think because I am just so weird. I just like, I'm with you, Rob. I'm like, I think that's how it started, was me like kind of razzing my family, like getting behind them and like making those noises, you know, just being goofy. Or like, sometimes my boyfriend and I, he's really good at like just bird noises in general with his mouth, but sometimes when we're trying to get each other's attention, we'll be like, and he'll repeat it back to me if we're paying attention. I think that's like literally how that started, was just me attempting to be goofy and like make that sound from across the room. And I would like to be really good. I have my days and my moments where it sounds like really good, but I do get a little shy about it.
That's good stuff. Keep working on it. Cause you've got it.
Well, here's the deal. Steph will be in Kansas come May. So maybe we can make arrangements to get out and do some turkey hunting. Sounds since our insane. Season is much longer than y'all's in Iowa. So we can play around with that. Stay tuned for part two of Steph turkey calling. All right, Steph, we have our famous lightning round. Da-na-na, okay. Da-na-na. I really do think we need to come up with like some type of like catchy song that plays before the lightning round. We'll work on that. So I'm going to ask you some questions, 8 of them, just a this or that. Answer off the cuff. Again, if you feel like you can't pick one or the other, you can pick both. Maybe explain yourself if you want to, but these are just fun, casual. And I bet some of us can kind of guess these now that we've had some detailed conversation now. So goose hunting or upland hunting?
Oh, no. upland.
Oh, that caught me off guard. Okay, here we go.
I have a puppy. So, you know, if I have a dog for it, that's where it's at.
That is true. So segue into goose hunting. We're in the season right now. You're loving it. Are you field hunting or are you hunting over a water hole?
Field.
Okay. So fast forward to warmer days, or I guess colder days too. You've talked about ice fishing. While you're fishing, are you fishing with a rod and reel or are you bow fishing? Your preference.
Bow fishing.
Oh, nice. Spoke like a true archer. All right. So here's a great question. Your coon dogs, you have what, 3 of them?
Yes.
And straight, your little Brittany Spaniel.
Yes.
Are they sleeping in bed with you guys or are they sleeping in kennels?
Bed.
Ah, there we go. I love it. I always love the discipline behind people's minds with their hunting dogs. It makes me laugh.
Yes. And you know, it's not fair, but the coon dogs don't get it as good as the bird dogs. The bird dogs are more spoiled than the coon dogs.
Well, he's a baby too. So I mean, yeah. It's fair. It's fair. So after harvest, let's say you just harvested a beautiful turkey. Are you going home and trying a new recipe to share with family, friends, or are you kind of passing the harvest off, letting somebody else cook for you to enjoy?
Probably trying a new recipe at home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably both are true usually, but probably trying a new recipe
at home. Yeah. Yeah. So what's more enjoyable? And I think we all might know this. What do you tend to enjoy more? Guiding, mentoring men or women?
Women. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. To take that one step farther. And I'm curious, because I don't know if I've ever asked you this. So this is going to be 9 questions. Sorry. Do you prefer to mentor women or our kids?
No, I don't know that. I mean, that's pretty 50-50. I have mentored more adults than I have kids one-on-one. But even just right before starting with Outdoor Mentors, I've started to mentor and coach more kids. And I don't know, I still get that same like awesome feeling regardless. Yeah. So that's, I mean, it's probably 50-50. I'd have to choose both. It'd be hard for me to choose.
Yeah, I love it. You don't have to actually choose in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, that's ladies, right. I don't. Right?
We're just going to make you squirm a little right now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the young lady. Yeah, I could tell a story from that too. But yes, probably the young ladies are probably, if I had to like narrow it down, that's probably right.
Yeah. Cool. I love that. I love that. Super inspiring. So you're getting ready for season. You're pumped. The fall season's quickly approaching and you're trying to get in shape and get ready, right? So are you busting your butt in the gym on cardio? Or are you more lifting, maybe a combination of both?
I used to be into powerlifting. I kind of still am. Lifting is probably more of my go-to, but with the hunts and like little outdoor adventures I have coming up, I need to do a lot more cardio than I was previously doing.
Yeah. You know, as a woman, you quickly realize how difficult it is to lug around decoys or drag a deer.
You don't have to be a woman, Brittany.
That's true. That's true. I'm speaking as a 5'4", 140-pound gal. I'm like, I'm outweighed, out strengthened by every animal out there.
Yeah.
All right. So last question, and this is kind of fun. Rob never asks any questions like this. So this is really where we differ. What's your ideal date scenario? Okay. So are you doing a little boat fishing, trolling for catfish in the summer sun, maybe doing a little squirrel hunting afterwards, having a beer later? Or are you deeps of winter enjoying a goose hunt, running around behind your dog, collecting some sheds, maybe doing some ice fishing?
I mean, one of my favorite things to do with Jacob, my boyfriend, is we do all of those things together. So, and I'm definitely a fall baby. Like I love the fall into winter timeframe, but the spring, summer trolling for catfish is one of my favorite ways to spend time with my boyfriend. Cause we take our bows with us for bow fishing. And I'm really into using a cast net for catching our bait. So I get a lot of gratification from catching all of my own like shad to then use for trolling for catfish. My boyfriend has been a hunter, outdoorsman his whole life, and he's a guide. He worked in a fur shed for, you know, he's worked in a fur shed for 20 years. He's just very skilled, and any opportunity I can find where I can be better at him than something, I take it. And he's not very good with a cast net. And I was like, oh, I am going to get good at that. And so I catch our bait. So we'll usually start the morning with, you know, he's trolling me around, I'm catching the bait. We get everything started while he's kind of like cutting stuff up. he'll take me to like a good carp area and I'll shoot a bunch of carp off the front of the boat. And then we get into trolling for catfish the rest of the day. And then we clean them and we usually take them to friends and then we fry them up that night. I mean, that whole day is just, it's like my favorite time.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. That would be hard to pick, but you definitely painted a great ideal date scenario.
Yeah.
Tell Jacob to listen to this later.
Yeah. Oh, he knows. That's I'm truly so happy at that time of year. It's great.
Very cool. Right on.
I love that.
So Steph, you got a lot going on, right? guiding and mentoring, newly boarded with Outdoor Mentors. You get your podcast. We're so happy to have you on our podcast as a guest. How do our listeners connect, follow you? You know, how do they find what you have going on and those types of things?
Yeah. So I'm easy to find on Instagram. My name is Steph Lane. So Stephlane. If you type that into Instagram, I'm pretty easy to find. Or on outdoormentors.org website. My information is on there. If you're interested in Outdoor Mentors or connecting with me, my email and phone number are on there. I might be a little too easy to find, honestly. I'm out there now.
That makes you a good mentor.
Yeah. And woodsandwatersproject.com is my website with my podcast too. So there's another way as well.
Yes. Go look her up, give her a follow, give her podcast a listen. It's great.
Thanks, Brittany.
Yeah. You're welcome. Steph, it's a privilege to know you, to learn from you, to work side by side with you. I'm just thrilled about the days ahead. Especially May when we do some turkey hunting, maybe do some fur harvesting, fur bear conversations in the fall with you as well. Thank you so much.
Love that.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. We sure appreciate it. And I'm very sure you've inspired a lot of folks out there to, you know, shoot their shot, to get more comfortable in the outdoors and, you know, get out there and enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you guys. This has been so nice. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. I'm excited to have you on, like Brittany said, maybe again this fall and talk about, you got so much going on. We can't squeeze it all in.
So, I know.
And that's not a bad thing, right? Yes, like that. That's terrific. So like always, I would encourage all of our listeners to get involved, get outdoors, go find whatever organization that fits you, whether that's Pheasants Forever, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, National Wild Turkey Federation, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. There's somebody out there, Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, that is putting dollars to work, working on conservation, helping the cause, and try and volunteer and join up with folks and make a difference.
Amen to that. Until next time, I hope you all get out there and enjoy the Great Plains. We'll see you guys later.
See you guys.